We welcome in Pat Paone, analyst for the Carolina Forest Panthers. And Pat, I was just touching on this a moment ago. Can you explain the inconsistencies in Carolina Forest this season? Because there have been games where you can look at them and they look physically dominant and say, man, this is Mark Morris's vision for the program. And then there are days like today where they lose 38-3 to Sumter.
Honestly, I can't explain it, Lewis. It's very confusing to me. And something that David Buff and I touched on big time was the change in philosophy this week to really, and David Buff had obviously called the game last week where I didn't. They had thrown out some wildcat last week with Diverse taking the direct snap. And we actually were just talking about it right before you guys sent me the text message to come on that we thought about two-thirds of the plays were from the wildcat. I mean, it really didn't allow Matt Beal to really get into a rhythm in the game, whereas last week he had three touchdown passes of over 50 yards. He really only threw the ball down the field twice, and that was kind of getting garbage time.
That's a little unusual sounding to me. I would love to hear from Mark Morris what the explanation for that is, whether it's a health concern issue with Matt Beal. Maybe they're protecting him by giving the ball to Diverse more in direct snap. Maybe they just want their best playmaker to already have the ball, not worry about having to deliver it to him. But in the couple of times that I've seen Matt Beal this year, Pat, it seems like his arm strength is pretty good for a high school quarterback.
No, he definitely has the arm strength, and David Buffett was saying that as well, as he was accurate last week and had great arm strength on his throws. This week, like I said, just a change in philosophy, and very strange to me. And something we said during the broadcast was that it was really a tale of two halves, where the first half, you know, both defenses were very strong and being able to stop the run, and really it came down to Carolina Forest inefficiency in the red zone, only being able to get a field goal, and that was at the end of the first half in an untimed play. And Sumter was only able to score one touchdown, so 7-3 at the half, and then second half, it was just all on onslaught. It was really, really unfortunate. But Carolina Forest kept their head up, and it was good to see that these kids were really battling all the way to the end. But, yeah, it was just very strange to see. And I've called two other games where, you know, there's been a very good mix of play calls throughout the entire game by Coach Morris and the staff. This one, it just seemed like they had one directional mind, and that was to pound the ball with Diverse Simmons, who ended up having 195 yards off 25 carries, but really kind of an ineffective game in the same token.
Yeah, you do wonder perhaps if they saw something on film, thought Sumter was vulnerable to the Wildcat, or again, you also wonder a little bit about the quarterback's health when you hear that so many Wildcat plays were called. But we're not Mark Morris, so it would be kind of silly to speculate. But I am curious, Pat, on your perception of Sumter. They are very good on paper. They're 7-2 on the season. They just improved to 3-0 in Region 6 4A, and they have Conway next week, and that's likely going to be the game that does decide the region championship. For those Conway supporters listening, what kind of team are they going to see next week?
They're going to see a team that has really three or four really great athletes on offense, starting with the quarterback, both running backs, and they also have a pure athlete who comes in as a type of motion wide receiver and also plays safety. Triple option offense where it's any of the three, either the quarterback, two running backs, can all take it for long distance runs. But really, it was the one running back, and his name is escaping my mind right now. He really was the dominant running back throughout the entire game. He's actually the leading rusher for Sumter. Defensively, massive defensive line, just some really big boys, and they were able to obviously Diverse did have 195 yards, as I said, but they were able to really put their foot down and put their foot in the dirt in the red zone and hold Carolina Forest out of the end zone, keeping to a field goal.
Carolina Forest falls today 38-3 at Sumter. They also fall to 4-5 on the season, but good news for Carolina Forest. Next week it is West Florence, and it is at home. West Florence 1-8 lost to Soxie last night. So, Pat, perhaps that game on the schedule is going to be the medicine that Carolina Forest needs.
Definitely needed this moment in time, and totally expect Coach Morris to light a fire into these guys because this is about the time they need to kick it into high drive and really make that push towards regions.
Absolutely. He is Pat Paone, analyst for Carolina Forest. Pat, really appreciate it, man. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you, Lewis. You too.
All righty. We do have a final score to report for you guys. Conway does hold on to that 50-29 lead and wins over South Florence. That scoreboard update is brought to you by Island Chrysler. The deals are hot at Island Chrysler. See the full selection of Chryslers, Dodges, Jeeps, and Rams at islandchrysler.com. Island Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, south of the South Causeway, across from the new Lowe's Food Center in Pawleys Island. Island Chrysler, doing business the way it should be done. Now we continue on the Jimmy Z Hibachi Hotline, at this time checking in with our good buddy Ian Guerin of the Sun News, MyrtleBeachOnline.com. Also find him on Twitter at iGuerin. Ian, checking out your tweets, it seems like you were a witness to Myrtle Beach's dominant performance tonight. What are the overall impressions?
Yeah, my overall impressions are Mickey Wilson is definitely nitpicking because he started talking about all the mistakes they made tonight. you know, a 42-7 game over a team that's got very serious potential, you know, both throughout the regular season and in the playoffs is, you know, it's impressive. So, I mean, their defensive effort tonight was, you know, realistically about as good as I've seen in a couple of years against a team with that many offensive weapons. I mean, Georgetown was the, you know, the highest scoring team in the region coming into the game and, you know, putting up 35, 36 points a game and, you know, pretty consistently. And they had nothing tonight. And they were, you know, both sides of the ball really just kind of got overwhelmed and it snowballed and got away from them. And they didn't do anything until it was, you know, too late.
First off, Mickey Wilson is that coach who, when he preaches about execution, you actually believe him, right? Like, he's the guy that you imagine watching film at 2 in the morning and really actually believing in what he's saying about execution, fundamentals, and whatnot. And you can definitely see that always, second-half improvement. And we were chatting with Wayne Gray about that about 15 minutes ago. Now, explain more about the defense. That, to me, we expect the Myrtle Beach offense to click, but if they have a defense to pair with it that is equally as dominant, that seems to be a legit state championship contender.
Well, right. I mean, one of the things that I think Georgetown early kind of got away from what they're doing because they weren't having success with it. They're having very short drives and, you know, we're kind of getting overwhelmed as far as couldn't get anything going to sustain it. And so every time they turn around, their defense is on the field. And so Georgetown wasn't kind of letting Jarvis Brown freelance like he can do. And he's very good with his legs. And then in the second half, they come out and they put three really good, third quarter drives together. Two of them stall inside the red zone. They turn it over on downs. The third one they score the touchdown on. But I mean, and then Myrtle Beach just kind of turns it on in the fourth quarter, runs away. But, you know, then late, they're letting Jarvis Brown run, and he gets hurt, and it looks like it's going to be a knee sprain. Who knows how long he's going to be out? I mean, an ankle sprain last year knocked him out for 3 weeks of the season, and it really probably kept them from maybe improving their position a little bit more than they did. But really, I think tonight what you saw from Myrtle Beach's defense was they were gang tackling. They were doing it behind the line of scrimmage. They were not letting Tony Lara get going, you know, the running back of Georgetown. And they especially kept Jarvis Brown in check for basically three of the four quarters of that ball game tonight.
You mentioned Jarvis Brown. We heard he exited the game after taking a hit on the sideline. Were you able to come up with any more information on his health?
Well, like I just said, they said it's a probable knee sprain, but they won't know till the morning. You know, they got to wait a lot of times to see where the swelling is and things like that. But yeah, I mean, obviously that's a different animal than last year when he got hurt. You know, they've still got McAllister, their backup quarterback, who's, you know, essentially a defensive player and a punt returner. You know, he comes in and, you know, he's a decent quarterback, but he's just not Jarvis Brown. And I don't think anybody's, you know, going to argue. So, you know, if it's a situation where Jarvis has to play next week, you know, I'm guessing it's going to be very hard to keep him off the field if it's not more serious than a knee sprain, just because that game is going to mean so much now. And I don't know if you saw what I posted on Twitter, but Myrtle Beach is the outright region champs now, and we've got a four-way tie for second place, and Georgetown is one of those teams. So every one of those four enters next week with knowing that a loss could very well knock them out of the playoffs.
He is Ian Guerin of the Sun News, MyrtleBeachOnline.com. Now, Ian, this Georgetown team has lost two in a row. Tonight they go on the road and see a very, very good Myrtle Beach team, though. Has your opinion of the Bulldogs and their potential changed at all?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to give them a lot of leeway last week because asking them to play a second game in 4 days is just, you know, it's kind of ridiculous to expect them to do much that day. Tonight was different. I mean, they just looked overmatched, overwhelmed. They didn't look prepared. And actually, Bradley Adams said after the game that he felt like his players quit a little bit in the second half, when even after they started getting momentum. And I think the defense was tired from having been on the field, and just they couldn't keep up. And it was very disappointing to him. And from my angle, not having a dog in the hunt, you know, as far as who wins, I was surprised that they didn't put up more of a game than that. I picked Myrtle Beach to win, but I certainly didn't expect it to be a 5-touchdown game.
Now, Ian, you've broken down pretty thoroughly Myrtle Beach and Georgetown. I know that that was the game that you actually covered tonight, but I want to get your reaction to a couple of other things that happened in the Grandstand. What do you think, if this knee injury for Bryan Edwards ends up being a significant knee injury, obviously that hurts Conway, but do you get a feel for how good that team could be without Bryan Edwards?
They're a different team. I mean, you're talking about a kid who can do anything. I mean, I think if they line him up at quarterback, he'd find a way to put up a lot of yards. I mean, he's an absolute freak athlete, and if you take him off the field, they're going to feel it. They're going to feel it, you know, at wide receiver. They're going to feel it in the punt return game. You know, this is a kid who also steps in and plays defense in crucial, you know, situations. It's unavoidable that he is, you know, obviously the kid with the best long-term potential. If it is a serious knee injury and you don't want to say anything, you know, if he misses next week, you're talking about the de facto region championship game against Sumter that he's missing. If it's 2 weeks, then you're talking about, you know, going in the Carolina Forest game without him. Now, all that said, he's not the only player on that team. I mean, I've espoused the solidarity of that wide receiver unit and how they have all these other speedsters that I really think that would be starting, at just about any school in the area right now. I mean, Mickey Wilson would love to have a couple of those receivers. So they do have other targets. I mean, Peyton Derrick has proved that he's not just going to throw the ball to Bryan Edwards. But again, Bryan's the best player in the area for a reason, you know, as far as long-term potential and how he can impact the game every single play.
Yeah, and the thing that we don't know watching these games, Ian, is just how much the defensive attention on Bryan Edwards in the slot allows those other Conway receivers to be open on the outside, or the field position game where people just decide to not even put out legitimate punts. They just throw them on the sideline because they don't want Edwards to make a house call, as he did tonight. He had a 62-yarder for a touchdown before he went down.
Right.
So those are some subtleties of football, and we'll, you know, Sumter is a bad game to try and figure out how good you are potentially without Bryan Edwards if he does indeed miss that. Now, Ian, also just kind of North Myrtle Beach and Carolina Forest, very confusing teams to me, because those are two teams that at different points of the season you probably could have said, hey, they're maybe the second best team in the Grandstand, or, you know, these teams are teams that we expect to be playoff contenders. Both of them end up dropping games that I would say surprise us. Not necessarily that Carolina Forest lost to Sumter, but how they lost. And North Myrtle Beach loses to St. James 17-7. Your thoughts on either of those two performances?
Yeah, I mean, North Myrtle Beach to me is the most confusing team because they are so inconsistent. You know, they do so many different things well, but then at times they put the ball on the ground. They'll throw an interception. Their defense looks subject. St. James tonight, that's not the biggest surprise of the night by any means, them winning that game, because we've seen kind of that consistent growth out of St. James. I mean, they played some pretty good opponents this year. They've won some bigger games. So, you know, that, you know, you don't want to make it sound like North Myrtle Beach just dropped the ball, but North Myrtle Beach, again, last week was the only team that was able to rebound after 2 days of rest and win a game of the six in our area that played. You know, Carolina Forest, they're a little different because they're going to do the same thing well, no matter what, and the difference for them is how well their defense plays. A team like Sumter that's got bigger athletes and has been doing this for years and years at the state's highest level, I mean, they're the one of the only teams in the state that's bigger than Carolina Force in terms of enrollment, and it shows. They've been kind of dominating this series since they started playing. I think Carolina Force has only beat them one time. So, you know, the fact that Carolina Force can't go to Sumter and win that game doesn't really surprise me a whole lot.
Last question for Ian Guerin of the Sun News. Ian, what did you make of Sakasti splitting reps at quarterback last night between Keon Clora and Hunter Illing?
Yeah, I mean, I liked Clora getting some looks, just if nothing else, because you know Sakasti's got to get some positive momentum going. But they also need to keep guys healthy. I mean, Illing got knocked around last week a lot, and he doesn't need to be out there taking hit after hit after hit in games that, honestly, I mean, they're not going to make the playoffs. So they don't need to be sacrificing everything. But to keep a little bit, you know, going and to show, you know, like, hey, we can still win games, you know, I think it's important for them. I like the fact that they haven't given up. But at the same time, they're maybe protecting, you know, the future a little bit and keeping kids, because injuries can be one of the most demoralizing thing, and I've said it for years that more than losses, players getting hurt is one of the biggest things that can break up a program. And Doug Illing's got a fragile program right now, and the fact that, you know, they're not playing well this year. They went 7-5 last year. And so there's a lot of people wondering, like, were they only good because of Hunter Renfrow? Now, if they can get it turned around and maybe get something going into the off season, I think it's going to be, you know, one of those big boosts for that program going forward.
He is Ian Guerin. Follow him on Twitter at iGuerin. Check out his writing at MyrtleBeachOnline.com and in print in the Sun News. Ian, as always, we appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good night.